models.
Well, thank you very much. What I'll talk about today is some of the work which I have been doing here at LSU, myself and with my students, on physics of AI models and loop quantum cosmology. So my talk is essentially based on two works which have recently come out, one with my students, which is essentially to contrast various qualitative features of physics in different Bianchi models based on the quantization given by Rabe and Edward Wilson. And secondly, the work which appeared recently on the resolution of strong singularities in Bianchi 1 model, which is essentially an extension of my results on the isotropic model. Okay, so let us go to the slide number 2. So I'll first introduce you what is the status with the isotropic models, which we are all very well aware of, just to make a stage of what we want to do in the Bianchi models. So in recent years, quantization of isotropic models in loop quantum cosmology has revealed a very rich physics at the Planck scale. A very rigorous understanding has been reached using extensive analytical and numerical methods and various phenomenological models, and various colleagues from all over the world have contributed to these achievements, which are in isotropic cosmology. We have a very robust understanding of most of the results in isotropic LQC. The main result from the isotropic loop quantum cosmology is that the classical Big Bang singularity is replaced by a big bounce in the Planck regime. So if you evolve states which are peaked at the classical trajectory in GR backwards in isotropic universe, then these states do not go to Big Bang, but they bounce when the energy density reaches the maximum value. The underlying reason for this bounce is tied to the non-local nature of the field strength of the connection, of the Ashtaker connection, and this is essentially responsible for extending the space-time beyond the classical boundaries. There have been many examples in the isotropic models where singularity resolution has been reached in full glory, and these include master scalar models and especially flat and curved space-time, including k equal to 1 model, in the presence of positive and negative cosmological constants, in the presence of inflationary potential, etc. All these models come with some of their subtleties, and as we add matter, the subtleties can increase, but despite these subtleties and certain difficulties, quantization of these models has been successfully achieved. Physics has been analyzed in detail, and numerical simulations have been performed. So there is a robust the occurrence of bounce and the saturation of the energy density can be seen as a robust result in the isotropic model so far. What we are going to focus in this talk is something which is called effective space-time description, or the effective dynamics. My whole talk will be based on effective dynamics. Effective space-time description captures details of the underlying quantum theory to an excellent precision for all these examples which I have told you right now. In particular, the effective dynamics is extremely good for universes which bounce at scales greater than the Planck volume. So here it is important to note that the Planck curvature can be reached much before even the Planck volume is reached. So all the numerical simulations which have been published so far in literature, they consider bounces of the states which occur greater than the Planck volume. So this is essentially a kind of an empirical test for the effective dynamics in these regions. These states are also peaked at large volumes at late times. So we know that for a certain class of states, the effective dynamics is extremely good. But what has happened in literature is that due to success of the effective dynamics, so even in the regime where the calculations were done, the many physical implications have been studied. And the effective dynamics has been also used to study cosmological perturbations and Gaudi models. So a lot of physics which has been extracted in loop quantum cosmology has been based on effective dynamics. And effective dynamics has gone essentially like step by step with numerical simulations done with full quantum states. It has guided, you know, on certain occasions, it has put tests and so on. So it's a very valuable tool. There is no guarantee that the effective dynamics turns out to be true, because there are different approaches to do that. In this talk, we are going to assume that the effective space-time description, as we understood in the isotropic two-quantum cosmology, is going to be true in the anisotropic models, and then draw conclusions from it. So you should take these conclusions with a lot of salt, because if these effective space-time description has certain extra corrections or certain subtleties which we do not understand, then some of these results can change. But my hope is that most qualitative features will be retained. Okay. One of the results which I am which I put at the end of this first second slide is relevant for this talk, is the one which I proved in 2009, that using effective dynamics, it was proved that there can exist no strong curvature singularities in the spatially flat model. These include not only Big Bang singularities, these include singularities such as Big Rip and Big Freeze singularities, which can occur in dark energy scenarios. This work also gave us insights on the work of done by Kyoto, Cardoso, van der Stoep and Brands in 2008, where they found for certain scalar field models, there can be events in loop quantum cosmology where curvature invariance diverge. So what was shown was that you can have in loop quantum cosmology events where curvature invariance diverge, but in isotropic models, all of these events turn out to be weak curvature singularities. I will in few moments explain what do we mean by strong curvature and weak curvature singularities. So weak curvature singularities are essentially harmless. You can pass detectors through these singularities and geodesics can be extended beyond that. So these are essentially events which can be thought of as not as physical singularities. Very recently these results have been also extended to the curved isotropic models. Let us go to the next slide. So this is where I try to pitch in what we are going to do in this talk. So now we want to go beyond the isotropy. We have, in the last 6 years, we have understood in great detail about isotropic loop quantum cosmology. Very recently, works have, quantization of an isotropic loop quantum cosmology has been satisfactorily performed. So now we want to go and look at the physics in the anisotropic models, which is very interesting because of many reasons. First of all, the physics in the anisotropic models, due to the presence of wild curvature, is extremely rich, as I will try to show you today. Many important lessons can be drawn, which include for qualitative dynamics, for the VKL behavior, even for cosmological perturbations in the early universe. And if you want to prove something like generic resolution of singularities in quantum gravity, we have to understand anisotropic models in great detail. And this is exactly the way the singularity theorems were also proved in GR. Like Tolman and Eddington first looked at the isotropic models. Rajchowdhury started looking at the anisotropic models, and it was essentially the insights Rajchowdhury obtained from the anisotropic models were useful for Penrose and Hawking to prove the general theorems. So, as I mentioned, that the quantization of Bianchi models has been recently performed, and this has been essentially done by Abbey and Edward Wilson Ewing in this period, 2008 to 2010. They have done the quantization of Bianchi 1, Bianchi 2, and Bianchi 9 models. Various subtleties in the earlier works and problems in the earlier works have been addressed successfully. Limitations of the previous works have been overcome. The big question is, what is the resulting physics of these models? And whether this physics confirms with what we have learned in the isotropic models. There have been few earlier works on the anisotropic models, analyzing the physics by Chow and van der Sloot, Roy Martins and van der Sloot on magnetic fields, also with Artemovsky and Lalak on magnetic fields, on the cyclic model, and so on. But these works did not probe in great detail what is actually happening. So these were essentially picking up a potential and doing and looking at the solution. We'll go into more detail right now. Some of the questions which we are going to address in this talk, these are just some of the questions which essentially have the link with the isotropic models, are the following. In the isotropic models, the bounces in loop quantum cosmology are characterized by energy density reaching a maximum value. So energy density, if you pick up any paper in loop quantum cosmology and isotropic models, you will always find that energy density has been given a lot of emphasis. And there is a reason for that. The reason is that in the isotropic models, if you have matter with fixed equation of state, let us say if you just have dust, if you have a massless scalar, if you have a cosmological constant, and so on, then for all such matter models, since the y curvature is zero, all curvature invariants in the space-time can be expressed just in terms of energy density. So if you know the behavior of energy density in such models, you know the behavior of all curvature invariants. But this is no longer true in the Bianchi models. In the Bianchi models, the y curvature is non-zero. So even if you have matter with fixed equation of state, energy density by itself cannot capture the details of the singularity resolution, because there are scalars like shear scalar which play an equally important role. So this shear scalar is essentially related to the electric part of the Weyl curvature, can be related to the electric part of the Weyl curvature. I have not given the formula here, but it's not very difficult to see. So what we want to understand is that so we can expect from this point itself that in the anisotropic models, the energy density will not have much emphasis in comparison, for example, to the shear scalar. All of these quantities will play an equally important role, so we have to look at all of them together. So we want to understand what are the properties of energy density, the expansion scalar, which is essentially like the Hubble rate of the mean scale factor, and the shear scalar in the space-time. We want to ask, are they bounded, as in the case of the energy density and isotropic model. The reason why we are asking them why they are bounded is because this gives us the first signal, whether they are going to be singularities or not. We have to recall that these quantities determine the fate of geodesics via Rai-Chaudhuri equation in GR. And we expect that if we are ever able to write a generalized Rai-Chaudhuri equation in quantum gravity, some analogs of these quantities in operator form will be present. And these will provide a certain insight on the focusing of the geodesics, which is essentially obtaining first insights on the nature of singularities. So it's important to understand whether these quantities are bounded. If these quantities are bounded, it's a very good sign that the singularities will be probably resolved. If these quantities are not bounded, it's a very bad news. So that is why we want to probe that. So it's very important to probe these quantities and to see whether what are the bounds. Then we want to understand what is the fate of the strong singularities in Bianchi 1 model. So this is essentially the generalization of the isotropic result. I'm not going to talk about fate of strong singularities in Bianchi 2 and Bianchi 9 models. This is still work in very preliminary stage. It's a tedious kind of work. So it is going to take some time. Okay, let us go to slide 4. Now I give you the outline. So I will first present you the nature of singularities, a very brief overview of the concepts which we will need in this talk. Then I will do a very brief recap of the isotropic model, of the needed results, essentially to explain what kind of modifications come out and to give the talk comprehensive. In the third part of my talk, which is essentially one of the results of the talk, I will talk about what are the results towards the resolution of strong singularities in Bianchi 1 model. There are no generic results right now because I have not proved the results for arbitrary matter. What I have done is for the case which has been most understood in GR, which is a vanishing anisotropic stress, which includes perfect fluids like dust, radiation, whatever perfect fluid you can think of. It does not include magnetic fields because they have non-vanishing anisotropic stress. So you can, but these the results are extendable. It is just like more work which has to be done. I do not foresee any problem going to other matter. What I'm going to show you here is that all known, whatever singularities which we know in GR, which are strong singularities, which is a very wide class of singularities for the Bianchi 1 models, are resolved in the effective dynamics. As in the isotropic models, I will prove you that the weak singularities can occur. So the events where curvature invariants were diverging in the isotropic models, they are not artifacts of isotropy. They can also occur in anisotropy. But these will be weak singularities. So we have to live with the weak singularities. They are harmless. Then I'll give you an example to illustrate things for perfect fluid with a fixed equation of state W. W is pressure divided by energy density. greater than minus 1. So any equation of state greater than minus 1, it can also be in as large as possible without violating any energy condition. So if W greater than minus 1, there is no upper bound on W. So for all these states, all such an equation of state, which are essentially all the kinds of matter, includes all the matter which has been studied for Bianchi 1 model in GR, it includes all of them except the magnetic field. You can show that there are no strong similarities. You can extend geodesics to arbitrary values of fine parameters. Then in the next part of my talk, I will talk to you about the physics of Bianchi 2 and Bianchi 9 models. And I will show you how the bounds on energy density and the expansion and the shear scalars emerge in these models. I will show you what is the role of energy conditions in the Bianchi 2 models. And this is for the first time in loop quantum cosmology that energy conditions seem to play a role, which is possibly a positive sign, because if we recall similarity theorems, they were proved with energy conditions. So it is quite possible that in quantum gravity, energy conditions will be also used. Surprising result, which somehow got hidden in the isotropic models, and it comes out in the anisotropic models, is the non-trivial role of inverse triad corrections for Bianchi 9 models. So those who have who have seen some talks with the isotropic loop quantum cosmology, we have understood that if you have a spatial topology which is non-compact, such as a black universe or k equal to minus 1 model, then these inverse triad corrections do not play any role. They are not even meaningfully defined. But they can play a role when you have a spatially compact topology, like in k equal to 1 model. But somehow it turns out that unless you are probing Planck scale universes, their role is also not important. But to obtain the bounds on the Bianchi 9 model, it turns out that the spatial compactness requires that these corrections are also important. They cannot be ignored. In the end of my talk, so the first part of the talks will be very analytical. Well, at least they will not be phenomenological. So I will not show you many examples. I will talk about the bounds in principle, like in principle what can happen for solutions and so on. Many of these bounds which are true in principle are not true in practice. So here I will give you the applications in the last part, where I will show you how, if you take a massive scalar field in Bianchi models, what are the kind of bounds that you see. I will give you very few examples. We have been doing very extensive simulations. And whatever I will talk about here about the bounds is essentially only in principle true. Like, we do not even saturate these bounds by huge margins. So in practice, many of these in principle things only remain in principle. And in the end, just to so that we don't sleep in my talk and in this lot of boring analysis, I will teach you how to make pancakes from Sigax in the end. Okay, let us go to the next slide. So if you have any questions, please ask me. Are there any questions so far? All. Okay. So let us go to the nature of singularities. This is slide number 6. So I will briefly summarize the different types of singularities. And I'm only summarizing the singularities where curvature invariants diverge. And this is the classification, which is essentially for the isotropic models. There is not a similar complete classification for the anisotropic model. This is the work which is still to be done. But these similarities can also occur in an anisotropic model. Okay, first of all, we have Big Bang and Big Crunch. I will go quickly on this, because probably you have all seen this slide many times. So you have a Big Bang and Big Crunch similarities. The scale factor vanishes in finite time, causing the energy density to blow up. The curvature invariants diverge and offers for all matter which satisfies the energy condition. Then we have type 1 singularities, which are big rips. The scale factor, energy density and pressure diverge at a finite time in future. The universe essentially rips apart and the dominant energy condition is violated. So this is also curvature invariant diverging event, which occurs at infinite volume. Then we have type 2 singularities, which are called sudden singularities, which were discovered by John Barrow and his colleagues. And they occur at a finite value of the scale factor at a finite time. As the singularities approach, the energy density vanishes, and the pressure diverges. So the energy density is zero or finite in this singularity, but the pressure is diverging, and the divergence of the pressure of the matter part causes the curvature invariance to diverge. And this singularity has been generalized to the anisotropic models by Barrow and Sagas in 2004. The third type of singularity, the fourth type of singularity, which is curvature invariant diverging, is type 3 singularity, which is big freeze. These singularities occur at a finite value of the scale factor and in finite time. So unlike Big Bang, which occurs at vanishing scale factor, or Big Rip, which occurs at infinite scale factor, these occur at finite scale factor, and they share the same features as Big Bang and Big Rip, but they are occurring at finite scale factor. Let us go to the next slide, number 7.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
This is John. For the type 2 and type 3 singularities, are there any energy conditions which are violated?
Yes, so as I said, let us go to slide 6. So, the energy conditions for which singularity, type 2 and type 3?
Yes, type 2 and type 3.
Yeah, for type 2 singularities, generally we have to violate dominant energy condition. And similarly for type 3. So we have to, these singularities do not occur if you satisfy weak energy condition.
Okay, thank you.
So if you satisfy weak energy condition, then only Big Bang and Big Crunch occur. But you can satisfy, if you violate weak energy condition, then the other singularities can occur. So you can take a viewpoint here that I'm going to consider a matter which for all times satisfies weak energy condition, so you can just throw away the other singularities. But as I said, this is a tricky thing, because if you have scalar fields which do not have constant equation of state, which have a varying equation of state, you consider arbitrary potentials, then these things can happen. So a priori one has to be careful. Okay, let us go to slide 7. The important thing to note is that not all singularities where curvature invariants diverge necessarily signal the breakdown of laws of physics. So we should not be scared of events which are curvature invariant diverging without making further analysis. So these singularities have been classified as strong or weak. So strong singularities, the examples are Big Bang, Big Crunch, and Big Rip, also Big Freeze. Weak singularities, the examples are sudden singularities and shell crossing singularities, for example, in gravitational collapse, sudden gravitational collapse scenarios. To determine the strength of the singularities, we have done uses and necessary and sufficient conditions which have been formulated by Clark and Krolak, which are based on seminal works of Kepler and Krolak. And essentially what one does is one analyzes the integrals of the Ricci and the Weyl curvature tensors over causal geodesics. And to give an example of what we are going to look at is that consider a space-time which admits an incomplete, inextendable null geodesic. I'm going to focus on null geodesics in this talk. The analysis can be carried out for time-like geodesics also. It is infinitesimally more difficult, but I stick to null geodesics. So we look at the null geodesics which are parameterized by an affine parameter tau. And the singularity which is occurring at tau equal to tau naught is Krolak strong, or it is strong by Krolak condition, if and only if one of these two integrals, which you see, one over the Ricci tensor and one over the Weyl curvature tensor, which is given by C alpha beta mu, one of these integrals should diverge. If one of these integrals diverges as the singularity is approached, then we say the singularity is strong. If these integrals are finite as the singularity is approached, then the singularity is weak. The physical criteria of when a singularity is strong or weak is essentially that if you throw a detector towards the singularity, then a strong singularity crushes or completely annihilates the detector irrespective of its material strength. So that's your fate is sealed in that case. In the weak singularity, if you throw a detector and you can make it arbitrarily strong, then the tidal forces are not strong enough to destroy the infalling body or detector, and you can survive the weak singularity. So they are curvature invariant diverging events, but they are not inevitably harmful. You can go beyond that. An important thing is that there is a conjecture by Kronach, which I cannot write on the slide, so there is a conjecture by Kronach that strong singularities are essentially the singularities beyond which you cannot extend the geodesics even after the maximal extension. So they are essentially the physical singularities. And the weak singularities are the one beyond which you can extend the geodesics. This is a conjecture. This has not been proved so far in full generality. But to my knowledge, and also like I asked Kronach, to his knowledge, there has been no example in classical GR or in any other theory where this conjecture seems to be violated. So whenever we see a strong singularity, geodesics cannot be extended. This is what we know so far. Whenever we see a weak singularity, geodesics have been always extended beyond that. It will be very nice if this conjecture can be eventually proved. Let us go to the next, just 1 second, like before we go to the next slide. The important thing to note is that you can similarly write Tipler's conditions. They involve one extra integral. So they're very similar, just one more integral over the fine parameter. And the main point is that the singularity can be strong by Kronach's criteria, yet it can be weak according to Tipler's criteria. But all singularities which are strong by Tipler's criteria are also strong by Kronach's criteria. So it is sufficient if you want to understand to have this resolve all strong singularities to look at Kronach's criteria. That is what we will do. But you can also look at Tipler's criteria. It is just one more line in the exercise. Okay, let us go to slide number 8. So now let us talk about the geometry of the singularities. We looked at what are different kinds of singularities. We looked at what are their strengths. Now let us look at the geometry. The geometry of the singularities in Bianchi models is extremely rich. And a lot of work has been done in the 60s by Dorshkevich, Thom, Ellis, Jacobs, McCullum. Many people have contributed to this. They have understood the nature of geometry of the singularity for various matter models. This essentially has been completely classified. Many theses have been written on this subject. And they essentially fall in these 4 categories. So first of all, we have point-like or isotropic singularities, which we are all very familiar with in the isotropic models. In these singularities, so first of all, these singularities are characterized by 3 scale factors. We have in the Bianchi models, instead of 1 scale factor as an isotropic model, we have A1, A2, A3 in the metric. So they are characterized by these 3 scale factors. All of these singularities can be Big Bang, Big Crunch. Like it is not that point-like is only Big Bang or barrel is not Big Bang and so on. They are all Big Bang, Big Crunch singularities. So let us look at point-like or isotropic singularities. All scale factors vanish as the singularity is reached. Essentially, the approach to the singularity is like in the isotropic cosmology. In general, you have these singularities when you have matter with stiff equation of state or a massless scalar. If you do not have matter, which is like massless scalar, in general it's difficult to have point-like singularities unless you tune the anisotropies very much. Then you have barrel singularities. In the barrel singularities, one of the scale factors approaches a finite value as the singularity is approached, and the 2 scale factors vanish. That's like a barrel. In the cigar singularities, one of the scale factor diverges and the other 2 approach 0. And then you have pancake singularities, where one of the scale factors vanishes and the other 2 approach a finite value. And for various matter models, including all perfect fluids, magnetic fields, and so on, these are the only singularities which are known in GR. Like you can prove that these are the only allowed cases. All of these singularities in GR, in Bianchi models, they occur with a divergence in the energy density, with the expansion scalar and the shear scalar. At these singularities, all curvature invariants diverge and the geodesic equations break down. All of these singularities in GR are strong singularities, both by Tipler and Kronach conditions. Okay, if there are any questions on so far, please ask. Otherwise, we'll go to the recap of isotropic models.
Param, maybe you have to speed up because we already are into half an hour. So for the next part, maybe.
Okay, so I will very quickly go through isotropic models. So this is essentially like just to, this all we know, so we will go very quickly. So we have the gravitational Hamiltonian constraint, which is essentially FAB part. FAB part is expressed in terms of polynomials, and we quantize that, and it leads to a quantum difference equation. The other part comes from this EE, the determinant of E part, which gives us, which using Feynman trick, gives us what are called the inverse track corrections. The important thing to note in this talk is that there are two kinds of modifications which can come, one from the holonomies and one from the inverse triads. The inverse triad corrections, they are tied to the peak is tied to the fiducial cell, and that is why they are not meaningful in especially non-compact models, but they can be meaningful in compact models. Okay, let us go to next slide, number 11. So what we are going to consider is the vector dynamics, which has been derived for various matter sources, including massless scalars by Victor Tavares and dust by Josh Willis. There is another approach being developed by Martin Boewald and his collaborators. The approach I'm going to concentrate on is the one which is developed by Victor Tavares, in which the effective Hamiltonian in the lapse equal to volume, it looks like something down, which you see this H effective equal to this. This effective Hamiltonian can be derived using geometrical formulation of quantum mechanics, using coherent states with under some certain controlled approximation. All through my talk, I'm going to assume that the effective Hamiltonian, as you know, for the isotropic models, is true for the Bianchi models. This can be a wrong assumption, which can be proved by any of you or myself later on. But so far, with the amount of trust which we have achieved with various numerical simulations, this is a reasonable assumption to work with right now. Okay. In the end of this slide, I show you the Friedman equation, which essentially is a modified Friedman equation, which tells you about that the bounds occurs when rho is equal to rho max or rho critical, which is 0.41 rho flat. Now let's go to slide number 12. There is a phase of superinflation which occurs due to the modified Friedman equation, which leads to a lot of interesting physics, including very profound implications for the probability for inflation. The important thing is that the allowed range of the energy density between the rho critical and zero, it also implies that the expansion scalar has an upper bound, which is given by this 3 by 2 gamma lambda. Lambda is essentially related to the square root of the minimum area eigenvalue in loop quantum gravity. And you can show that if you have expansion scalar bounded, then you have geodesic completeness in the effective spacetime. Then the important thing here, since I'm going quickly, is to look at the expression for the Ricci scalar, which is in the middle of the slide. You can, as I told you, if you have an isotropic model's fixed equation of state W, then you can express the curvature invariance in terms just of the energy density. So this is an example you can do for the Ricci scalar. And from this example, you see that if you have finite equation of state, then the curvature scalar is bounded. But if your equation of state becomes infinite, then the curvature invariant, this Ricci scalar, can diverge. And this is what is the sudden singularity. And as I emphasized earlier, these are weak similarities, and the geodesics can be extended beyond them. And they are generically resolved. The strong singularity is generically resolved in the isotropic flat, as you see. Okay. So this is essentially the summary of the isotropic models, and now we will go to the anisotropic models. If you go to slide number 13, that gives you an example of a weak similarity. So those who are not aware of the similarity, they can look at these two plots. That is sufficient. You have a scenario in which the Hubbard rate or the expansion scalar, the red dashed curve gives you the classical GR, the blue curve gives you the effective dynamics curve. So if you look towards k equal to 10,000, the Hubbard rate is becoming zero. Well, the core breaks down there, but it essentially goes towards zero. So in LQC, if you look at the curve for the Ricci scalar, you see that it is actually going to infinity. And what you can show is that even if the curvature invariant is going to infinity in this curve, there is no problem because this is a weak singularity. So you should not be scared of diverging curvature invariant events. Okay, let us go to... Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to come towards the main part of the talk, which is slide number 15, the Bianchi 1 model. Here also I will go through the first part quickly because essentially it is GR. So we have a space-time metric, which is given by ds squared equal to minus pp squared plus a1 squared dx squared, a2 squared dy squared plus a3 squared dz squared. I choose lapse equal to 1 here. these scale factors can be related to the symmetry reduced triads in LQC, like P1, which is one of the symmetry reduced triads, can be written in terms of A2, A3, P2 as A1, A3, and so on. Here L1, L2, L3, they refer to the fiducial length of the fiducial cell which we have fixed. And epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3, they are plus minus 1 depending on the orientation of the triads. What we are going to do is we are going to fix the orientation of the triads to be positive throughout without any loss of generality. Now you can look at the directional Hubble rate, which are defined as HI, A dot I by AI, which are given by these expressions. From these directional Hubble rates, you can define the expansion scalar for the co-moving observers, which is H1 plus H2 plus H3. And you can define a shear scalar, which essentially comes from the expansion tensor, or the shear tensor, the part of the expansion tensor. And the sigma, this is the shear scalar, is the sigma square, which is this formula, 1 by 3 H1 minus H2 square plus H2 minus H3 square plus H3 minus H1 square. And as I said earlier, these quantities are extremely important because they enter into the Wright-Chaudhary equation, which is shown in the end, which tells us about the fate of the geodesic extendibility in the space-time. So if these quantities are bounded, then we are in good shape. Also, the divergence, if these quantities are not bounded, then it necessarily implies that your curvature components are growing up. Okay, so this so far is revision. Let us go to slide number 16. So the quantization of the Yankee 1 model was performed earlier on by David Chow, and was followed by Lukash and the Madrid group. But there were certain problems in the Bianchi 1 quantization. I will not go through the details of what were the problems and how were they resolved, because I do not have much time. But I can tell you, and you can take my word, that there is an improved quantization which successfully resolves all those problems, which was done by Abe and Edward Wilson in 2009. It leads to a non-similar quantum difference equation. And the isotropic group quantum cosmology can be obtained from this quantization by integrating out an isotropic degrees of freedom. The effective Hamiltonian is shown in the middle of the slide for lax equal to 1. Here mu bar 1, mu bar 2, etc., they are analogs of mu bar, which you saw in the isotropic models. They are proportional to the triads in a particular way, like mu bar 1 is lambda square root of P1 by P2 P3. And one immediate consequence of the vanishing of the effective Hamiltonian constraint is that you can obtain the energy density, which is essentially the matter Hamiltonian divided by the volume, as equal to this expression, which is in the end of the slide, which is bounded by exactly the same number which you find in the isotropic models. This is a known result. So maximum of the energy density coincides with that of the isotropic model. So this was essentially known for last 2-3 years. Okay. Let us go to the next slide, number 17. Now you can find out the expressions for the expansion and the shear scalars. Essentially what you have to do is you are given the effective Hamiltonian, you use the Hamilton's equations. After using Hamilton's equations, you look at the Hubble rate, the expansion scalar, the shear scalar. Like you can put them on Mathematica or whatever software you use, or you can write a code and you can either do things analytically, or you can find out the maximas, or global maximas of these quantities. It turns out that the Hubble rate and the expansion scalar have a global maxima given by 3 by 2 gamma lambda, and the shear scalar has a global maxima in Bianchi 1 models given as 10.125 by 3 gamma square lambda square. The important thing is that in the Bianchi 1 models, the upper bound on energy density, the expansion scalar and the shear scalar is independent of the matter content. Everywhere you see that these bounds come with lambda in the denominator. And in the limit, the lambda goes to 0, it essentially means that you are going to GR, these quantities blow up. So you get back the singularities. So what we have shown so far, which this was known already by previous works, is that in Bianchi 1 model, the energy density, expansion scalar, and the shear scalar, they are bounded. The question is whether the boundedness of these quantities implies that there are no singularities. I will show you that even if these quantities are bounded, the visual invariants can diverge. Okay, let us go to slide number 18. So you can find out, once you know the effective Hamiltonian, you know the expressions for the Ricci curvature invariants. Like you know that given the metric, you can find out the Ricci scalar, which is given in front of you. fractional scalar, the scale of the line curvature. You can express that in terms of the Hubble rate and the second time derivatives of the scale factor. And you can find out any other curvature invariant as you want. So you know the, so essentially after this is just dirty work. You know the factor Hamiltonian. You find out all the equation of motions, find directional Hubble rates, find the generalized Wright-Jaggery equations for second order time derivatives, plug them all together, and then analyze. This is just messy algebra, but you can do it. It is straightforward. So if you recall, what I've shown you in the last two slides is the Hubble rate in the Bianchi 1 model is bounded, has a maximum bound, has an upper bound. But these expressions of curvature invariants contain not only the Hubble rate, but also the second order time derivatives. There is no such bound on the second order time derivative. So if, so, and it is possible if the second order time derivative of the scale factor diverges, then these curvature scalars can diverge. And that is what actually happens. Let's go to slide 19. So I show you here, after some messy computation, the expression for the Ricci scalar. You can also similarly write the expressions for Weyl scalar and Kretschmann scalar. They are available in the paper. They are very long. And essentially, whatever I'm going to say also follows from that. So you see in this expression, there is a big square parenthesis, which you can forget, because everything in that parenthesis is bounded. It is multiplied by 1 over 2 gamma scale lambda scale. So we do not care about the square parenthesis. In LQC, all of those terms are bounded. The terms which are unbounded, what we also, so let us look at just the first line of the equation. So energy density is bounded, but the pressure is not bounded. Also, if you look at the round parenthesis, P1 dot by P1 is universally bounded, and kappa 1,2, kappa 1,3, etc., they are essentially constants of motion because we are taking matter with vanishing anisotropic stress. So only quantity, so this Ricci scalar can diverge in two cases, if the pressure diverges or if the volume goes to zero with energy density, expansion scalar and sigma scalar becoming remaining finite. So the main, so what we see from here, from this expression, is that Ricci scalar can diverge, can only diverge if in the evolution volume becomes zero and our pressure becomes infinite at a finite value of rho, theta and sigma square. And this is extremely unusual because whenever we have seen in GR that the volume becomes zero in these models, the energy density, theta and sigma square have been diverging. So I'm just pointing out to you isolated cases which are in principle possible. Like I'm not saying that this is going to happen. Like as I will show you, there are probably no solutions satisfying that. But in principle, if you choose some arbitrary matter such that the volume goes to zero with energy density theta and sigma square remaining finite, then this curvature invariant can diverge. The other way it can diverge is if the volume remains finite, but the pressure becomes infinite. And this is essentially what we saw for the certain singularities also. So for all matter considered so, what you can also prove is that for all matter considered so far in Bianchi models in GR, none of these conditions which I say about Ricci scalar are satisfied, and you can show that all curvature invariants are bounded. So whatever Kipthorne, Torshovic or McCallum and Ennis did for matter with vanishing anisotropic stress, you take all that matter, take all that work, you analyze and you see that you will not find curvature invariants to diverge in all those cases. So in GR, the curvature invariants always diverge, and LQC, they do not diverge for that matter. Let's go to slide 20. I will essentially summarize here the main results of this part. Like, there is a lot of details I have not talked about. So we want to find out, we have found the events where the curvature invariants can diverge in the given LQC. Now we want to find out what is the nature of the singularities where the curvature invariants can diverge. So this is, you can do the analysis with the null geodesics, and you can look at the Prolet conditions, and you get these conclusions which are in these red dots. First of all, you can conclude that in GR, point-like barrel, cigar, and pancake singularities involve one of the scale factors to vanish and an associated divergence of the directional Hubble rates. This is always true. In loop one of the small g, due to the boundedness of the directional Hubble rates, all of these similarities are avoided, so they just go away. The values of the scale factors that which geodesic evolution breaks down in GR, they are excluded from the effective space-time of group 1 cosmology. This is essentially very similar to what happened in the isotropic case. All known types of strong similarities, I'm saying known types, I'm not saying all types, because there may be some similarities which are not known, which may be new similarities. All known types of strong similarities which have been considered in the Encke 1 model are generically resolved. You can prove that. There are two types of curvature invariant diverging events. The events which are because of infinite pressure at finite scale factors, you can show that geodesic equations are well behaved and the integrals and Kronecker conditions are finite. And these are essentially generalizations of weak similarities in isotropic LPC. So two cases where curvature invariants can diverge is if pressure becomes infinite at finite volume, which can happen, like for certain singularities, so they are weak singularities. This is a new kind of event which I have never encountered, like after looking at a lot of literature, and probably this event is ruled out by some other considerations, but this is only, at the moment, it is in principle possible, so I'm stating it. This is the kind of event, curvature invariant event, which occurs at vanishing volume. So if in the situation, if in an evolution, curvature invariant diverge at a finite, that's a very important point, a finite value of energy density, expansion scalar, and shear scalar, at a finite value of the fine parameter, and a vanishing volume. So you have to send the volume to zero, at a finite value of a fine parameter, and you have to keep energy density, theta and sigma square to be finite, then geodesic equations can break down. The strength of the singularity in this case is not known because there is no known solution to compute the strength of the singularities. And I am not aware of any solution in GR, for at least for these models, which satisfies these conditions. So this is probably like it, this may be completely something which is ruled out by some other consideration, by variant physical matter or so on. But I'm just talking about a case which is in principle possible. If the solution is found, it will be a very interesting new kind of singularity. It may still turn out to be weak. The space-time may still turn out to be maximally extendable. So you recall that even in the Tissot space-time in isotropic cosmology, geodesics break down, but you can maximally extend it to k equal to 1. So something similar may happen. So this is something which we have to look for, but we don't know any example of such a singularity. Okay, so let us go to the next slide.
Can I ask a question, Parag?
Yes.
So on your second point, when you say all known types of strong singularities of the classical theory, the Bianchi 1 model, are generically resolved, did you mean generically or did you mean always resolved? Because if you mean generically, that means there are some special cases where they are not resolved.
No, I mean always resolved. You are right. Completely right. They are always resolved. So I again emphasize, you pick up any paper of 1960s by all of these guys who did all of this matter. Take any matter, all those strong singularities which these guys found are resolved. Always resolved.
Thank you.
Okay, let us go to the slide number 21, which is a perfect fluid with a constant equation of state W greater than minus 1. Now you may be wondering, like, why I'm doing W greater than minus 1, why not W equal to minus 1, why not W less than minus 1? It is just because I have not finished the proof for W equal to minus 1 and less than minus 1. I can prove it much easily for W greater than minus 1, easily in the sense that it is far more difficult for the other matter. But here it is more obvious how things happen. If you take W greater than minus 1, any W greater than minus 1, I'm not restricting W beyond this point, then you can show that there is a minimum volume allowed in the space-time. And that minimum volume is given by this formula, where C is a constant determined by the initial conditions on the matter. And as you can see, that if lambda goes to 0, this minimum volume goes to 0. So this is just a ramification of the underlying quantum geometry. For W greater than minus 1, you can show that the geodesic evolution never breaks down in the effective space-time. The Kepler and Kronecker conditions are never satisfied, and there are no strong singularities. So W greater than minus 1, you can prove there are no strong singularities, and this essentially covers all the papers which people have written in GR on Encke 1 models except for magnetic fields. So we are done with those works. Now you can assume that what if there are there is exotic matter, what are the qualitative features you can see? If you assume that there are exotic similarities, like big rip, big freeze, and sudden similarities, you can also draw conclusions. You can show that there will be no generalized big rip or big freeze similarities in being given LQC. But there can be generalized sudden similarities in being given LQC, but heuristics can be extended beyond that. So this is what we conclude for these models. If there are any questions on this, like please ask, like then I will go to the last part of the talk. Okay, let us go ahead. Now I'm going to show you, let us go to slide number 23. I'm going to tell you very briefly about what happens for the Bianchi-2 and Bianchi-9 models. So we start with that there are important subtleties in the quantization compared to the Bianchi-1 model. I'm not going to go into the details of what those subtleties are. They are quite important, but there is not enough time. And this was done by Abe and Wilson Ewing in 2009. The physical implications have been studied for arbitrary matter and for massless scalar recently by Alex and his student. For massless scalar, we did it for arbitrary matter. You look at the effective Hamiltonian, which looks in the middle of the slide. Alpha is a parameter. Alpha is related to the one of the structure constants in the model, and we can put it equal to 1 in this analysis. What you find is that if you look at the vanishing of the effective Hamiltonian constraint, the energy density has a global maxima, which is given the 0.54 rho Planck. And if you remember what I showed you for the Bianchi-1, this global maxima is slightly different from what we found in the Bianchi-1 model, but still it is just like very slightly different, which is essentially a very nice result. This was essentially proved by Abe and Wilson Ewing for massless scalar. But if you consider arbitrary matter, then you can go into more details of what actually happens. So if one assumes the validity of the effective dynamics, then arbitrary small values of the triads, so this is a very big assumption, because the validity of the effective dynamics has never been tested below Planck volume also. So this is a big assumption. So if you assume that all effective dynamics is valid to arbitrary small scale factors, then x in this expression for the energy density can become infinite. And if x becomes infinite, then energy density can take arbitrary large negative values. This is also under the assumption that not only the effective dynamics is valid till that point, but there also exist physical solutions which probe these small scale factors. So this is only in principle possible. Whatever I'm stating here is in principle true. I will later on show you simulation, and even after doing extensive simulations, there are pre-initial conditions. We never breach these bounds. So these are things which are in principle possible. If you assume validity of effective dynamics to all scales, which is essentially a very big assumption. Okay, let us go to slide 24. Then the important thing is that you know that due to this behavior of energy density, the role of the energy conditions now becomes quite important. Now, if you recall that in GR also, that energy conditions play a very important role to eliminate potentially unphysical solutions. And same thing can happen in loop quantum cosmology. And you can make a choice that I do not want to consider matter in which energy density can become unbounded negative, because it may imply that the matter Hamiltonian is unbounded by itself, and you cannot quantize it. If you cannot quantize it, you will never be able to find the effective Hamiltonian and so on. So far, whatever I have shown you in effective dynamics does not take care of such considerations. So it is possible that all this is ruled out by quantum theory, such matters. So you can restrict to weak energy condition. If you restrict to weak energy condition, you find a maximum of the expansion scalar, which is given by this 5.612 by Planck lambda. And similarly, you can find the maximum of the shear scalar, which is given by 65.82 by LP scale. Again, as in energy density, there are important considerations for expansion scalar and shear scalar. The only when the energy density is unbounded below, this is when the x goes to infinity, this is when the scale factors can go to zero, then the expansion shear scalars are unbounded. For all other matter, the matter which has bounded below Hamiltonians and energy density, the energy density, the expansion scalar and shear scalar, they are bounded in Bianchi 2, or they are finite at the Bianchi 2 model. Let us go to the next slide, 25, Bianchi 9 model. You can do a similar analysis for the Bianchi 9. You start with the effective Hamiltonian, which is in the middle of the slide. And this model is spatially compact. And if you want to look at it in complete, in a holistic way, you have to include the inverse triad corrections, which were introduced by Thomas Thiemann in 98. And if you look at the, and you can again compute the bounds on energy density and expansion and shear scalars, and you find that if the approach to the singularity is isotropic, then there exists a universal maximum on, which is 11.74 rho plan. Now this number may scare you because this is much larger than what I have shown you so far. But what we find in numerics is that these numbers are never reached. These are only in principle conditions occurring, assuming that you have effective Hamiltonian value to all scales and occurring at Planck volume. So for the anisotropic approach to singularity, energy density turns out to be finite, except for an isolated case where two of the triads vanishes and the third diverges. Essentially, if you have a cigar or something, then take light of singularity, if you reach that singularity. If the effective dynamics is true, so this is a big if here, even when triads vanish, this is a really big assumption, and such an isolated solution exists, which is on top of that assumption, then energy density in principle can be unbounded. So this is what we find, in principle. Whereas in practice, if you do simulations, extensive simulations show that you can forget about these cases, the energy density never even saturates the bounds of the isotropic model. So this is in practice, so I will give you the examples of that. Let us go to slide 26. So you can do a similar analysis for the expansion scalar and the shear scalar, and you find that there are global maximums for the isotropic approach to the singularity, which are given by these values. And if you have an isotropic approach to singularities, these bounds can, in principle, be violated. And except an isolated case, these are always finite. So that is also a good news. An important subtlety which arises in these models because of the dependence of the bounds on inverse triad connections is the choice of labs. This has been pointed out earlier in the paper by Jurek, Kaminsky and Pavlovsky also in the case of isotropic models, and also like in a paper by Hori and Professor Gambini in a different context. We see a very similar thing occurring here in the anisotropic model. This is something which we are finishing. And what occurs is that if you change your labs, then the bounds which you obtain on energy density expansion and the shear scalars, they change. They change by a small amount, like it was 11.68, earlier it was 11.72 something. But the bound for the sigma scale, it changes quite by not so small amount. So the bounds can change. So this is for the first time. Like, this is something which we are still trying to understand what are the deeper implications of this. That the choice of the clock here is playing certain role in how you, what bounds you may eventually get if you have inverse triad correction present. Okay, I will not talk about this in more detail. Okay, let me go to the plots now, slide number 28. This is something which is upcoming, one of few of the examples of various extensive simulations we have been doing. So you consider an M scale, phi scale potential is just to give you an idea of what actually happens. Like whatever I talked about in the talk today so far was what is in principle possible. What let us see in some realistic cases what actually happens. So this plot which you see on the top is a scale factor, different scale factors versus time. Red line is A1, blue curve is A2, green curve is A3, and black curve is the mean scale factor. So you see here, the initial condition is specified at t equal to 0. If you see before t equal to 0, if you look at these curves carefully, you have a cigar-like approach to the singularity. Then many bounces occur in the Planck regime, like where there are oscillations. And when this universe comes out of the Planck regime, then if you look backwards, you have a pancake-like approach to singularity. So this is what I promised you, that you can convert the cigars to pancakes and vice versa. So similar things can happen. So here we see that the energy density, rho by rho max, you can see like unlike isotropic models where they were always saturated, the rho by rho max is extremely small. It's not one. Similarly, sigma scale by sigma scale max, and this plot has some wrong some numbers are missing. Like this is less than 1. This is 0.6, 0.4, 0.2. I'm sorry about this huge typo here. This is not 246. This is 0.2, 0.4, 0.6. Somehow the file has been corrupted due to reducing its size. So these are also bounded. But what you find here is that there are many oscillations, the scale factor is bound, and the energy density and shear are far below the saturation values. Let's go to slide 29. You similarly see the case for the Bianchi 2 model. A very similar things happen. Again, the energy density is bounded below the maximum value, and the shear scalar is bounded below the maximum values. Various expensive simulations with arbitrary initial conditions, we never find that these bounds are saturated. These bounds, to be noted, are still below the bounds which we saw for the isotropic case. So even though the anisotropic models tend to give higher bounds in principle, in reality, it's very difficult to find initial conditions where even the isotropic bounds are violated. So that is the main point. Let us go to the Bianchi 9 model, which is the slide number 30, which is a very interesting plot. So here I first show you the behavior of the scale factors in the two plots. One is the short-term behavior of the scale factors. And if you look at the red curve, the red curve is almost approaching zero when it is going down and before it bounces. It's a highly anisotropic approach to singularity. This is what we were worried about when we were talking about things which are in principle possible. If you look at the long time evolution, you see that somehow the universe, even if you have with this kind of potential, it slowly learns how to grow bigger. It is growing slowly and slowly, the mean scale factor, which is the black curve. And the various oscillations of the different scale factors is essentially, if you think in terms of the Kasner exponents, which I didn't talk about, that these Kasner transitions occurring between different scale factors while the universe is going through multiple cycles and multiple bounces. So this is an example in which you can have, with this n square 5 square potential, you have a cyclic universe, multiple cycles of the universe, different multiple bounces of directional scale factors. Eventually, the universe growing slowly, big and big. But that is not generic. You can have universes which are also becoming small. But the important thing I want you to notice is that this scale factor, red curve in the top plot, is going towards zero. So this can be potentially dangerous. Let us go to the next slide to see what actually happens. Slide 31. At that point where that scale factor is actually having an anisotropic approach to singularity, you still find that rho by rho max is bounded much below that, even the maximum value. And similarly, sigma square max is far below the maximum value. So in principle, we have seen that if there is an approach to scale factors becoming zero, you can in principle have large bounds. But here we have an explicit example where even though you have that, the shear scalar is perfectly bounded by far below its maximum value. So you can find many things in principle, this is the strength, but in reality, to find exactly the conditions which will lead to those in principle things is extremely difficult, and maybe those conditions don't even exist. So the punchline is that in this case, the approach to singularity is highly anisotropic. Even when the energy density and shear are bounded, even then the energy density and shear are bounded below the values corresponding to those isotropic approaches to singularity. Okay, now I'll just summarize. I will just put the slide here because I have taken 5 minutes of the time, so you can please ask questions.
So, questions?
When you are plotting in Bianchi test 2 first, rho divided by rho max.
Uh-huh.
This rho max is what? This rho max is something that is
rho max in the thing. Yeah, so this rho max is the rho max of the Bianchi 2 model. But you can plot rho by rho max even of the isotropic model. And this number changes very little because the rho max of the Bianchi 2 and the isotropic model are very close to each other.
So, basically, you're taking the, I mean, is in this paper with Ed Wilson. I mean, we looked only for the massless scalar field.
Yes.
So is it, I just had not thought about it recently. So if I replace the massless scalar field with a massive scalar field, and just look at the effective equation, is it still true that rho max remains the same, or does it?
Yes, rho max remains the same. That is, you can take arbitrary matter, and the rho max, for all matter satisfying weak energy conditions, rho max remains the same.
And then if I went back to, go to Bianchi 9, what is rho max?
Rho max is something like 11 times rho Planck.
And is it like Bianchi 2 in the sense that we can only put a bound and not really, in the isotropic model, at the bounds, one knows that this rho max is actually achieved in the isotropic model.
Yes.
In the effective equations and also in the numerical simulations of the full quantum theory. But in the Bianchi, all Bianchi models, Bianchi 1, 2, and 9, is it the case that there is no analytic argument which says that at any of these bounces, rho max must be achieved? One just puts a bound. Is that correct?
Yes, I
just forgotten, so I'm trying to remember.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, I think like one can make an analytical argument that those bounds will never be achieved.
So thank you. So that's just some thing that you can prove. I mean, the real bound might be lower. That's what you're saying.
The real bound is always low. Like I think one can actually prove it analytically. I have not proved it, but one can prove that for Bianchi models, rho max will never be achieved unless an isotropy is at zero.
More questions?
Tom, do you have any thoughts about the dependence on the curvature bound on the choice of scale factor? Does that signal a problem, or do you think something else is going on?
Sorry, can you please repeat, and in what context is this question?
The dependence on N. Is it a problem or is
dependence on the lapse?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a very good question. So let us go to that slide number 26. So this is something which like I have been worried about, that whether the choice of the lapse, since like in loop quantum gravity, like if we extend all this to the full theory, the corrections both coming from FAB and inverse triad will be equally important. So in this very simple model, like for Bianchi 9, we have an evidence that the choice of the lattice matters, like for the bounds. So what we are trying to find out is whether in simulation you see the effect of this choice of the bound, choice of the lattice. So far, we have not been successful even with doing very extensive simulation. But of course, that does not mean much. Like my belief is that you can always find very fine-tuned initial conditions in which you will see some effect. Now, the other question is whether that effect is observable or not. So, as I point out in this slide, the bounds are different from lattice n equal to v. But as I showed you in the simulation, you never reach even close to these bounds. So, even if you have different lattices and they give some bounds, energy density theta and sigma squared max, you're never going to reach them. So you're far below them. So this is a very small effect, which is essentially hidden. But it doesn't mean that you cannot think of a simulation. Maybe one is very creative enough to actually see these things happening. At the moment, I would probably conjecture that in principle these bounds are different, but in practice you will not have any observable effect. But this does not mean that if you go to more complex models, you will not have observable effect. Actually, like this is also probably going to shed some insights on when we do the cosmological perturbation theory, where we have most of the times assumed the choice of the lattice. Probably like if you choose a different lattice and you are people who do with inverse triad correction and so on, they should look at these implications when they do the perturbation theory. It is possible that maybe in perturbation things can be different. So you're completely right. In principle, it is possible.
Changed just a little bit. Is that known to be true for arbitrary choices of the lattice?
Sorry?
In principle, throw almost anything in there.
Yeah, so not making sense.
Param, is that okay for me to say?
Yes, actually, I didn't understand the question, so please answer.
So now this is an extremely good question. So at this point, I just want to say that this has been very recently analyzed in great detail by Shamek, who is a postdoc here. But we have thought about it some time ago. So let me start from scratch. So basically, if I go back to the Hamiltonian theory, then one sees that if I choose different time lapses or different choices of time, then I will get a Dirac observable. Now, how is this Dirac observable defined? Well, in quantum theory, it is defined by saying that you, if I want to have the observable evaluated at a given instant of time, then you sort of go, take the wave function, freeze it at that instant of time, operate on it by the kinematical observable corresponding to the density, and then again evolve forward and backward in time. So it is very clear from the expressions that different choices of lapses or different choices of times, they just correspond to different Dirac observables. So classically, we are just thinking of density as being the observable. But I mean, just as properties of going in the transition from classical theory to quantum theory, some properties can change. Even the spectra of the corresponding operators might have different properties. So physically, the question is really, and quantum mechanically, physically the question is really well posed if you tell me how you are going to do this measurement. And that measurement does involve a certain choice of time. And the two observables just are quite different observables on the same physical hyperspace. Space. I think Shamek's kind of very beautiful example has to do with just looking at Bianchi-1 model, in which you can show that there's a physical hyperspace space which is given to you once and for all, independently of the choice of lapses or choice of times you're going to make. And on that hyperspace, space, then you can go ahead and try to define various density operators. And these are just inequivalent density operators, and they will just have, in general, different properties. Now again, as one does expect, that that on the semi-classical state, at least times, all these things will correspond to what happens in the classical theory. But in the Planck regime, that is where we're talking about things like maximum density and so on and so forth. The question is different. I mean, if you choose one choice of time, it's a different observable. Another choice of time is a different observable. And these different observables can have even qualitatively different properties in terms of the behavior of the spectra, and certainly on things like bounds and so on. So this is a subtle point, but I think is, and the last thing that I want to say is that Shamek's nice analysis also shows the origin of this in the physical, in the classical level. If you take the phase space picture very, very seriously and don't refer to space-time, but just work in the phase space, again, one can see that similar things, there are ambiguities. They are not as drastic as in quantum theory, but conceptually, there are ambiguities, and these different densities correspond to different observables.
Thank you.
So, can I make a comment? This is Alex Perici.
Go ahead.
This is regarding the previous question of whether the density can be saturated or not. So we just recently, Jason Montoya and myself put a paper on the archives in which we made a very detailed analysis of the effective equations in Bianchi 2. And we analyzed different regimes. And we found that, for instance, if we consider these locally rotationally symmetric solutions to Bianchi 2, we indeed find solutions which practically saturate the energy density at the bounds. What happens in those solutions is that the shear goes to zero. So, of course, immediately after that, the shear is different from zero, so the space-time is anisotropic. But exactly at the bounds, the shear vanishes, and the energy density is saturated. So there are examples of interest which do saturate this energy density data by and S bound. Thanks.
Okay, I would just like to, I thank Alex for reminding me of that. So it can, what I was referring to throughout my talk is for arbitrary matter. So if you restrict the choice of matter, such as in maskless scalar, where the behavior is similar to sigma square in the Bianchi 2 model, and if you look at the isotropic limit, what you are saying is completely true. And this is what I said. Like, it will be not saturated and then isotropies are not zero. But if you reach a limit or reach a regime in which anisotropies are essentially vanishing, then you will almost saturate the bound. So I agree to it.
Sure, yes, but I'm not saying that what I'm saying is that the anisotropies in this case are zero just at the bound, so they're different from zero throughout the evolution.
Yes, so you will saturate the energy density at that particular point there.
It is not the. This is not the isotropic limit in a sense. It is
okay. So if at a certain point where the bound occurs, the anisotropy is zero, then you can write down all the curvature invariants in terms of the energy density, and you will find that energy density will be saturated. So that doesn't tell us about the generic picture for arbitrary matter in presence of various potentials. So it is true what you are saying.
Sure. I agree.
Even in the case of the massless case, I mean, the Alex's comment is very interesting because it is a bit confusing for me. Namely, that, you know, we're talking about just matter density, right? We're not talking, I mean, in the Bianchi model, there are also gravitational waves. Whereas in the isotropic model, there are no gravitational waves. And so one might have naively thought that if there is a bound or if there is some kind of a universality or something, that will really refer to the whole. To the total energy density, not just the energy density in matter. But in fact, in Bianchi 2, the energy density of, I mean, but in all these calculations, one is only calculating the energy density of matter only. One is not calculating the rest of the, I mean, the gravitational wave contribution is not being calculated at all. Then it's kind of funny to know why it is that in Bianchi 1, there is a bound, just for the matter part, right, which is the same as isotropic one. But in Bianchi 2, what Alex is now saying is that, in fact, there are solutions in which the higher bound is actually reached. It's from 0.41, some 0.54 or something, that is actually reached. It's a bit confusing as to why this is happening just for matter, and what is the difference between Bianchi 1 and Bianchi 2, which makes the highest value of energy density higher in Bianchi 2, but not in Bianchi 1, when both of them are gravitational waves. And in any case, one is not looking at the, in this energy density, one is not looking at the contribution from gravitational waves. I think conceptually we need to understand this.
Yes, I think that there are a lot of conceptual points which are still to be clarified. But regarding the gravitational waves, that essentially what the density is hidden in the shear scalar, sigma square, because that comes from the wild curvature part of the space-time. So we can look at the combined energy density also by defining it in a particular way, but that information is hidden in sigma square. So the bounds on that take care of that part, at least like at zeroth level. But I'm also deeply perplexed by like why for the Bianchi 2 the energy density turns out to be slightly higher. And why for Bianchi 9 it turns out to be slightly higher. I think that it also is probably tied with the way the quantizations are different in these models. And suddenly these are just the first results, and we need to do a lot of work on different models and with different phenomenological models in these space times to understand what actually is happening. Like we are far away from reaching the same level of rigor as we learned by isotropic models so far.
Can I get comments on this? So I think a wise question is very interesting. I certainly we need to think more about it. I'm not sure if this is for the reason that Param is saying regarding the way we are quantizing, but we can look for within Bianchi 2, what is called Bianchi 1 limit, in which the parameter x that you define becomes very small and not important, and we do recover in that case. The bound of the density, there's some solutions in which the density of the bounds reaches the bound of Bianchi 1, which is same as the isotropic case. And so that means that there's some coherence even in this quantization of Bianchi 2, which is made with open holonomies.
So I fully agree with what Alex is saying, because like one can look at these models in in different contexts. So even if you take the Bianchi 9 model and if you look at the limit in which the spatial curvature or the intrinsic curvature is becoming very small, if you will look at the simulations and you will tend to saturate, tend to agree with the bounds of Bianchi 1. And similarly, like as you have shown for the particular case of the massless scalar for the Bianchi 2, if you look at the limit where this variable x becomes insignificant compared to the other terms, then you will reach the Bianchi 1. So essentially there is a hierarchy in these space times, and as you will approach the limits, you will tend to saturate those bounds, which is very logical.
More questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.